Unhappy Nurses and Say Your Prayers on Insights in Nursing. Well, good day and welcome to another episode here at Insights in Nursing. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the program this week. A lot of good stuff we've been talking about in the recent weeks here on the show, and we have a ton of good articles to discuss in this episode, but as nurses are so busy, and we know we are, we ended up losing a bunch of panelists. But guess what? We are going to have an excellent show because I have Terry Schmidt on here with me. And whenever Terry's around, we tend to have great, fun-filled discussions here. So, Terry, welcome to the special two-person episode of Insights in Nursing.
I love the way you sell that, Jamie. It's good to be here. I always like talking to you and the rest of the gang, although they're not here today, because it always gets me thinking about things I should be concerned about.
Well, and we just kicked off talking about a bunch of different things as soon as we got on the call, when I started talking about some of the links we had been sharing back and forth. And the first thing that leapt out at both of us, I think, from the links we were looking at was a recent survey of the unhappiest jobs in America. And number two on the list, registered nurse. Now, two questions here. Is this super surprising to any of us that nurses have cited that they have poor compensation, poor growth opportunities, and a workplace culture that makes them dissatisfied with their jobs? Are we surprised by that? And, you know, is this something that can even be repaired?
Well, I think it's a great jumping off point. I think it can be, because you and I both know that nursing is full of people who entered the profession because we want to be here. We wouldn't be here if we didn't want to be here. We would have done other things. And so I think it can be improved. And I think there are organizations that are trying to do that. But, you know, this is multifaceted and it's being fed by a lot of different things. And I wasn't surprised at all. We're just tired, I think.
Well, and that's what really the first thing. I didn't actually find the survey first. I found a blog post over at advanceweb.com, and it was one of the nurse bloggers there pointing out this article and saying that, you know, of two out of six most satisfying, you know, number two is the nurse. And she says, I bet you're not surprised. I'm not happy to pass this on, but I'm sad and angry. I first started in as a fun and excited nurse, she says, and then now she's counting the days till she retires. And this is not uncommon. I see it. I hear about it from nurses I talk to. You and I, before the show, talked about this is not just bedside nurses. This is nurses at all levels and nurse educators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all of us. We're all tired. But that, you know, doesn't change the job we have to do or we need to do, and many of us stay because we feel that way too. But, you know, we talked about this two episodes previously, the new big study in Pennsylvania with the University of Pennsylvania, which has an excellent department of nursing doing lots of research and in pushing that out into practice, was that nurses who are burned out, their patients have poorer outcomes. And so we don't want a bunch of disgruntled nurses, because this is when we're trying to help clean up patient outcomes. We want to improve them, decrease costs. Ultimately, of course, it's all about money, but it's also all about the patient.
But that University of Pennsylvania study pointed out that the money savings by, and it looked at specifically at the two most common causes of hospital-based sepsis in patients were affected negatively by burnout. And they pointed out that just in the state of Pennsylvania, they were talking billions of dollars a year in savings to the hospitals. And when we look at the way CMS is going to be paying hospitals, they are not paying for these hospital-based side effects that are going to be occurring in these patients. So hospitals, you would think, would like to save billions of dollars a year by having a few more nurses around. Is this something that's solvable? I mean, do we have enough nurses being turned out by our nursing schools at this point?
Well, that's two issues right there. So staffing is one, right? So that's one of the reasons people are burnout. You and I both know that sometimes being the only nurse on nights and you're the charge nurse and you've got 8 or 9 patients, which is where many of our new graduates are finding themselves, is very stressful. It's physically demanding and emotionally demanding. So that's the first problem. So that's staffing, and then the hospitals have to hire for that. Number two is finding qualified staffing, and then they have to come out of the universities. So there's a twofold issue there. One, there has to be enough physical space within the university. So we're talking about everything from student health services to parking to computer lab access, and that happens at a university level. And number two is enough faculty. And so they're all aging. Some of them haven't retired, but you know, the universities then also have to be willing to hire nursing faculty so that you can expand programs. You can't just expand programs without the faculty. And that's where many nursing programs are finding themselves. They're being pushed because universities are tight on money to increase enrollment. And that's good. We need more nurses. But you're going to, you know, for all those extra 10 nurses you take in or 20, you're going to need a couple more faculty members. So those are two issues right there.
And I know that nurses and universities are trying to ramp up their programs. There's a lot of organizations out there that are pushing for more nursing faculty, and there's grant funding. I see it. You know, I look at news articles in nursing every single week, Terry, and I look at it for the nursing show. I look at it for this program. So I see all of the grant money, you know, the federal government and other charitable organizations like the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation are all throwing money at this issue, but it still doesn't seem to be.
But it doesn't just happen in 3 to 6 months. So I want new faculty. Well, okay, so I'm going to take this nurse and I'm going to send her to get a degree, right? So if she's teaching at a university level, that means a doctorate degree. 5 years. Okay, then I got to get her in and get her trained. Then at the same time, the university has to be ramping up to take in those students. So how far are the lines? So then we take those new students in and they're going to spend 2 to 4 years in our program. So now we're 9 years down the line, but we've got to start somewhere planning. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's that lag. But, you know, we've been talking about the nursing shortage. We've been talking about this impending doom. I think the economy, the fact that the economy dipped had an effect on that we didn't lose as many nurses as quickly as we expect. But that's going to change. I know you sent me a link, and there's some information on the American Association of Colleges of Nursing talking about the real numbers behind the nursing shortage, because a lot of places, you know, hospitals are saying there's not a nursing shortage, when a lot of people are saying, yeah, well, that's just because they're not hiring, but they should have more nurses. They just aren't. They aren't filling positions that they're losing.
Yeah. So we've got two issues there. And we've talked about this before. It's not just about staffing and it's not just about compensation. There are other factors in job satisfaction. So you brought up a really good point. What did you say before we came on about bedside nursing?
Well, bedside nursing is an entry-level position. And so we want to keep nurses at the bedside, and we want to keep our best nurses at the bedside. But so often our most experienced and best nurses, they're seeing that bedside position is an entry-level position. Now, I'm not saying that that's not why we got into nursing to begin with, was to be that type of bedside nurse. But everyone wants to advance in their career, and everyone gains new interests as they move on into adulthood, and they start wanting to become clinical specialists in certain areas. Or if you want them to go become educators, they can't stay at the bedside, or at least not full time. So how do you balance that? I mean, it is an entry level position. You can't keep people at the bedside for 20, 25 years, can you?
I wish we could. Because, like I said, I think that is why we do everything we do in nursing. And so we may get caught up in nursing research or in making doctorally prepared nurses or making nurse practitioners. And those things are all very, very important. However, bedside nurses and the care they give and educating those nurses, that is the crux of the nursing profession. And I agree with you, but it is an entry-level position, yet it's not. It's the most important. And so maybe we're looking at it the wrong way. Maybe that needs to be in a philosophy. I don't know whether shared governance assists with that. You know, there are some places where nurses work and want to stay forever. St. Jude's Hospital has a waiting list for employment, and it's got magnet status and all that goes along with that. But there are places that nurses want to stay. And bedside nursing is the most important thing, in my opinion, in nursing. And I don't know how we navigate that.
Well, I think it does have to be a basic cultural shift, but it has to happen in every single hospital. And that's the challenge. I agree with what you said. There are hospitals in my area too that people just clamor to work there. They go to functions. I know nurses that have gone to functions just to meet nurses who work at certain hospitals because they want to use that inside link to try to pull them into a job. Because they want to work at this certain hospital. And a lot of times, why is it always children's hospitals? I don't know. maybe there's something to be said about the patients.
We like our PD patients. Well, we can pick them. We can turn them more easily. I know that was one of my calls to the NICU originally. I'm like, here, time to turn the patient. Tink, okay, 1 pound. That was good.
Yeah. It makes a big difference. It does. And then
yeah.
I'm a big guy, but I don't like lifting and turning a patient. I mean, there's some, and that just brings up another point. There are so many aspects to what leads to burnout, what leads to fatigue in our workplace. And it has to do with, you know, lifting policies and how we care for patients physically, ourselves, you know, the physical mm-hmm. activities we have to participate in to care for patients. All these things can be draining, and you know, it only takes one back injury to ruin your career.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we all know how prevalent those types of injuries are in the healthcare workspace. Mm-hmm. So it all leads together. But when you come back to that University of Pennsylvania study that clearly points to nurse dissatisfaction leading directly to a negative patient outcome. And they just looked at sepsis, and they only looked at two types of sepsis. I have to think that we're going to see a whole lot more studies coming from this that are going to start pointing to other negative patient outcomes. And how many of these studies do we need to get to the point where they say, the hospitals say, we need to double our nursing staff, or, you know, add 50% to our nursing staff. Whatever the number ends up being, I mean, those studies have got to start coming up with a number of optimal patient to nurse ratios, and then hospitals need to follow them. And I don't know what's going to make us do that. I'm sure you're as clueless as I am, and you've been doing this a lot longer than I have, but this is not a new problem.
No, and I have some ideas, but they're going to sound negative. I mean, we don't bill. Nurses don't bill. Hospitals are the second leading revenue generation force in what we look at gross domestic product for healthcare. So they are making the money. You know, you would think it'd be insurance companies and pharmaceuticals number one and two, but it's not. And so bottom line is nurses look like an expense in an accounting department, even though we know they're not, and the research says they're not. And I don't know how you get that done. You know, the CMS is trying to do that with their new pay for performance. And part of that we talked about was patients getting to evaluate their evaluations that they do. Part of that was getting at customer service, but I think CMS was trying to get at staffing levels. How available were people? You know, were they there? People were. Did they come when you answered your call or pushed your call light button? Did they answer you? And that's not really how those are being portrayed. In some, not all acute care centers. But, you know, we had that one article a couple weeks ago about the acute care center that was changing how they were staffing based on number of nurses and nursing degree and that sort of thing. So it is happening.
Yeah, it is.
It may just be slow.
And that was the article we had a couple weeks ago on it was about a hospital in Philadelphia that was actually going to be getting rid of the bulk of their nursing assistants in favor of hiring, replacing them with about 50% of that number of nurses. So, you know, if they had 100 nursing assistants, they were going to replace them with about 40 to 50 RNs. And, you know, that sounds like it's going to increase the professional care of those patients, but I don't know how it's going to affect the ability of the nurses to do the physical part of the job that needs to be done.
And I think that's true. I was kidding about turning patients in the NICU. That's not why I was a NICU nurse, but it ended up being a benefit.
I know you were kidding.
We're still back to people and numbers because, you know, those nurse assistants work hard on the floor. So how can one nurse do the job of two nurse assistants?
Well, and they can't. I mean, then that just brings us back to, with all the additional tasks that have been assigned to nurses and responsibilities that have been assigned to nurses, that's why nursing assistants have to be there, because nurses are no longer available to change the bed sheets as often. I mean, I can say they don't, because I know there are places where nurses, you know, kick in and lend a hand wherever, but it is not, it is no longer one of their primary duties to do that, or even to turn the patient.
Yeah. And that was my favorite. Those were some of my favorite jobs, doing the sheets, giving a patient's bath. You could assess so much and learned so much psychosocially about what was going on with your patient, whether they could read or write, what they were going home to during those 20 or 30 minutes you would spend with the patient doing all of that.
And it was those caring moments. I mean, that's why we got into nursing, right? I mean, it really was about having those caring one-on-one interactions with a patient that is what draws people to nursing, I think. And unfortunately, in the world of today's medicine, most of that time is spent scurrying from patient to patient, administering medications, and then documentation.
Yeah.
And documentation has to happen. Writing a good nursing note is important. It was important then. It's important now. But there's got to be a way to adjust for that, or, you know, and maybe not more nurses, but overlapping shifts. So a nurse gets paid to do charting separate from their clinical time.
Ooh. Now, see, and things like that are a very good idea, Jamie. Or, you know, we talked about in the past with informatics, technology is just booming. So if everybody can have an Xbox 360 in their house that can recognize the player by scanning them and is voice activated control, why doesn't that happen when I walk into a room? Then I don't have eyes off the patient, right? So I can just speak my assessment, scan the meds in I'm giving, it records who was in the room at what time, and I'm done. And we will get there. It's just going to take time. I did see on this AACN page that there's a 5.1 increase in enrollment in entry-level baccalaureate programs in 2011. That's good.
It's excellent. I think, but I, you know, and I'll kind of give a kick, a happy sound out to my ADN program, because most of the nurses are still being turned out from RN programs, from associate's degree programs. And a lot of them then go on and get their bachelor's degrees.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I sometimes dislike how some of these surveys focus solely on baccalaureate level nursing.
Well, no, I agree with you on that. But this is AACN. They only accredit baccalaureate level and above.
So that's who that is.
My favorite group of students in the world is RN to BSN students, because they really want to be there, and they bring practice knowledge with them. They are just fabulous.
I agree. And I wouldn't trade, you know, my education that I got when I first became an RN. I loved it. And it was clinical. It was clinically based more so than the theory that a lot of, I know, the neighboring BSN programs, they didn't spend as much time at the bedside as we did. I was in a hospital where I got to see the type of clinical experience those nursing students had. And I really felt like we got a lot more hands-on time, which is what I wanted, because I did want to be that bedside nurse. You know, I did want to be that person providing care one-on-one to someone. So I really enjoyed that. And I was glad once I saw the experience that the other students were having from another school, I went, this is, wow, I'm great. I'm glad I made the decision that I was going to go to my local nursing school in a local college, two-year college, rather than try to do an accelerated master's degree, because I already had a bachelor's degree. And I had looked at both programs, and I opted for the closer one just for convenience for my family. And I'm so glad that happened, because those ADN programs, I think, are turning out an exceptional nurse.
They are doing a good job, and that's where we want to pull the baccalaureate programs in. And some of them do a very, very good job. You know, my to play devil's advocate, being an associate degree faculty member, my beef always was they spent 3 years doing prereqs and in 2 years and they had $70,000 worth of debt and they still only had an associate degree. And we were doing a huge disservice to the students who could have had a bachelor's degree in the same time and had an equivalent excellent education. So that's a curriculum thing that we need to work on. We don't want to shortchange anybody. But I agree. And if we're going to have a shortage, we've got to look at how those nurses are going to be produced. The INQRI, the Inquiry blog, which is one of my favorites, posted a link the other day to a school in the Northeast that's partnering with a community college, associate degree nurses, and then putting them through to a bachelor's degree. Their entire baccalaureate education, $17,000. It's going to be a game changer, and it's good. It's what we should be doing. We can't saddle these nurses with debt and then throw them out, then ask them to go back to school.
Well, and that's what, I mean, that's what my program did. They had program agreements with several different online programs. And this was, you know, a few years back when there weren't that many online programs. But I credit the instructors at my program for seeking out opportunities for us to continue. And it was always a point of discussion in class that this was not an ending point of our career training. Education. It was the beginning, and there was always the expectation put forward to everyone in that class, you will go on. You are prepared and qualified, and you will go on and get a bachelor's degree in nursing. and I appreciate that because the people, you know, I already had a bachelor's degree, but there was a lot of people there that came from a different background and never really thought of college. And they became a nurse, and here they are now professionally trained. It was important to encourage them that this was an achievable goal, that it was something that they should seek out and reach for. And I think that they did a good job of doing that. And I think that's some of what a lot of these programs are doing. You know, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation with their campaign for nursing's future. You know, a lot of these organizations, the Institute of Medicine Report, all point towards encouraging people to continue their education in nursing. And I think that that's being done.
Yeah. And how do we, you know, getting back in our circle to what we were talking about, how does that translate for a bedside nurse? What does that model look like, making our clinical experts the ones at the bedside? I mean, do we, you know, we should be paying for nurses to go back to school, yet keeping them at the bedside and changing their roles and expanding. And you're right, the Future of Nursing report from the IOM was pointing to that. And we've had that conversation. Nurses should be able to order social work consults on their patients. You shouldn't have to get an MD order for that, or diabetic foot care, or the dietitian. Or so expanding those roles, and maybe that's how we change job satisfaction and staffing. I don't know. It's certainly multifaceted.
Something you brought up earlier about speaking our notes. You know, how do physicians do a lot of their notes? You know, they dictate them.
I'm laughing because I have a family member who's the person they're dating is working as a scribe and getting paid so many dollars an hour. So they've had no training, but they've got clearance. They're in that EMR, and they follow the physician around all day and type everything for them.
Yeah. But who's to say that we don't, instead of a nursing assistant, why don't we have somebody that is our official note taker, that scribe, you know, that we come out and quickly dictate some notes to, they type them up. We just glance at them, read through them, make sure they're correct, and sign off on them. And how much more time does that give us at the bedside? Maybe that's the thing we do to encourage that experienced clinical nurse to stay at the bedside by giving them the thing they want, which is more time to be a nurse.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Well, I'm going to have to write all these things down. So I'm...
Put it on your
to-do list. Let's change nursing as we know it. Well, that's why we do this show. I mean, that's why I so much appreciate you and all of the other panelists that come on, because I think it's so important to have these discussions and talk to our nursing audience and our audience's existing nurses and students and people interested in what we talk about outside of the nursing field. But everyone has a stake in this. And, you know, if one person finds an idea here that they can use to improve the nurse's experience in the workplace in their facility, then all the patients are treated better there. So
yes,
that's what we have to hope for.
Yep.
And this doesn't, well, let's kind of move on, because there's a story that jumped out at me in the news that has directly to do with nursing burnout, with dissatisfaction, And it was a startling story about a nurse who accidentally disposed of a kidney in a transplant operation. It was a two family members, one family member donating a kidney to another family member. And for whatever reason, the kidney was accidentally dumped into the waste container. They retrieved it immediately, but the surgeon and the family members made the decision after looking at whatever it had come in contact with in the waste container that it was not necessarily the best option to go ahead and implant that kidney. And I think it was because there was another viable donor. But I got a feel for that person who gave up one of their kidneys.
I know.
And also for the nurse. I mean, two nurses, they say one nurse was responsible, but two nurses were put on paid leave. Now, they were paid, but paid leave for this. But you and I both made the comment that this could have been us.
Yeah. I think some days we're so busy at work, and I know that I am, that I don't know if I'm coming or going. Like, I would lose my head if it wasn't attached to my body. Thank goodness it is. And so, yeah, I chuckled out loud. It wasn't funny, but I thought, oh my gosh, I'm just thankful that wasn't me. And I think when we read about these medical errors, these medication errors, these things like this, that we have all had that thought. And that's part of the reason we have high burnout, because every time we go to work or you leave work, if you're going, did I remember to do that? Did I remember to do that? Did I mark all this off? Is someone going to call me in the middle of the night? Did I give the corrective so that I can't remember whether I did or not? And this is just one of those examples. And, you know, it was at a university medical center. And oftentimes those places are very nurse friendly. There's a lot of open communication, peer relationships between residents and physicians and nurses. And the article said, you know, this is unfortunate. This is the practice of medicine, and we make errors. It's unfortunate too, to see the nurses, because, you know, there are a lot of other people in that OR room and where that chain of command is.
Well, and that was my point when I looked at this was, I mean, I don't know, We won't know the background to this story, at least not in the near term. And hopefully it doesn't lead to some tragic lawsuit that, you know, exposes everything to the world. Mistakes do happen. We know that. But I had to wonder, is this a situation where it's just a continuing problem with a given nurse, which is sad and is a big problem? Or is it another issue that has to do with the way the process is set up? And was this a situation where they were, you know, trying to do volume work and get one patient out so they can get the next patient in? And we've all seen that in those types of settings where it's just turnover. And when you have two containers, one that has waste material and one that has the kidney, both next to each other, and in a matter of routine, you grab the one you saw out of the corner of your eye and dumped it, is, you know, that's a function of a poor workflow.
Yeah. And all of these places are a place for us, you know, to learn how do we do that better? And unfortunately, you know, sometimes this comes with new restrictions and regulations. That always happens, I think, when you have an event in a system. But you feel bad for the nurse. And I don't know. I won't pretend to know anything about the case. And I'm certainly not defending for her. And you feel bad for the patient as well. It's just a no-win situation.
And
I'm glad they're doing an internal investigation.
They are. And as I've pointed out in the past, this is devastating for the patient. But we have to remember, and you and I know this because of how we reacted to it, this is devastating to that nurse.
Yeah.
You know, she is a caregiver. And to have this occur in such a way that, you know, that had a negative patient effect. Somebody's transplant's delayed and another person had needless surgery. It had to be just horrifying and upsetting to that individual. And so there's an effect that happens there as well. And I'm glad, you know, when I read this article, I have to say they were saying all the right things for me.
Yeah, they were. They're doing everything right. And you do hate that. Well, was that this last year we read the article about the nurse who was in the middle of a medication error situation at work? It had been several months previously. It was a pediatric med error, and she committed suicide over it?
Yeah. We were talking about that probably six to 12 months ago, somewhere in the last year, I think. And Kim McAllister had brought that up. And it's a tragedy, but there is a side effect you know, I don't think this is not negligence on the part of a caregiver. It's an oversight and an unfortunate accident. And yeah, and we talked about this on last week's show with Teresa Heithouse, where she had brought up that this is just, you know, it falls to the nurses more often than any other member of the healthcare team, simply because of where we are in the process. We are the, you know, that last gap between getting the right or wrong medication to the patient, between getting the right or wrong treatment to the patient. And, you know, the nurses are the ones who have to be that, you know, even if the physician ordered it wrong and the pharmacist didn't catch it, it is still going to fall to the nurse, and it'll be her fault she gave him the wrong medication or different dose of medication. And that's unfortunate that it so often falls to us.
Yep, but that's part of the job. And sometimes I think we convey that in education and how important that is. But again, that feeds back to our first article, because you can only do that so many days before you're tired.
And by tired, we mean burned out. And that's unfortunate. But, you know, there are nurses out there that are finding ways to continue on and care for their communities in a variety of different ways, and do exactly what the nursing profession has long done, which is find an at-need, at-risk community and find a way to serve them. And I just wanted to briefly look at this last article that I found about a parish nurse. And I was excited to see it because I help out the parish nurse in my church community. And she's a wonderful nurse. She's retired as a nurse, and yet she said, you know what, there's a need here. And she jumped back in and volunteers to do blood pressure screenings at our church and post education to follow up with patients that have had healthcare problems. And, you know, I'm pleased that she asked me to help out with that and to help out with some education of the church community in different ways. But it's amazing to see how just nurses can affect people in so many different ways, and both in and out of the hospital. And this is bedside care too, in a way, because yeah, it is that one-on-one time with a patient to really hear and listen to them and address their concerns in a private and personal way.
Yeah, I loved this article. And I, you know, this is the missing link. These are two of the most important things I think that we need to look at as a nursing profession supporting. And I was thrilled to see there was grant money for this position that she's doing. So, you know, it's not always up to the government to solve all our problems. And I think there are a lot of resources within a community like a faith-based organization, whether it's your temple or your synagogue, or your church. And this is an excellent place for nurses to be at, to be doing public health, but also that second part of what is missing in acute care. So the acute care nurse is just making sure that patient is stable enough to go home. It's that home environment or maintenance or keeping people out, or, you know, making sure that everyone's got their flu immunization, or like you had said, doing blood pressure checks. Pardon me. And so this is great. This is exactly where nursing should be. And I was thrilled to see this. And this nurse almost functions in it as a case manager. She goes out and meets people where they are. And it was so holistic. Like, so if they're isolated, she's hooking them up with a library and feeding services and maybe referring them to someone that can help with healthcare needs if they don't have insurance. And so it was fabulous. I loved it.
Well, and we see, you know, and I know in my community, we see so many you know, diabetics having trouble managing their disease. But, you know, I got to give Rose kudos. That's our parish nurse. She has taken it upon herself to make sure she knows, if they want to let it be known, who the diabetics are in our church community. And she actively works with them and talks to them about how they're managing. I mean, it might be once or twice a month that she runs into them, but she takes the time, and it's that extra contact, because they're not seeing their endocrinologist on a regular basis. You know, they're seeing them every 3 months, you know, for maintenance, you know, blood work and things like that. But unless they have a problem, they don't call in. But there can be so many things that occur in between, and managing a chronic illness like that just needs that little extra touch of care. And it's one of those things that is keeping, I honestly believe she's keeping people out of the hospital, and she's saving our community thousands and thousands of dollars, because I could see some of these patients heading down the track of ending up being hospitalized for 1 or 2 days while they get themselves back on track.
I know. And I think it's important. One of the previous universities I worked for was looking at working on a master's in parish nursing and bringing that clinical component, you know, to public health management and mission work and transcultural care and case management and all of those pieces. But these nurses, we are nurses just stepping in there and doing it. I was thrilled to read that there were 25 of these nurses who are in Northern Illinois employed by the Advocate Health Services. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, 25 is not a ginormous number by any stretch of the imagination, but it's growing, and this will be a critical place, especially as we have aging population, for nurses to be active.
And these are employed nurses. Most parish nurses I know of are volunteers.
Volunteers.
You know, they're volunteer retired nurses just looking to keep their hand in, and, you know, because you don't stop being a nurse. It's not just a job. It's a lifetime. And so it was just exciting to see that. I didn't even realize there was grant money out there for something like this. You know, it's exciting to see that because I think that, you know, it is an opportunity. And I think this is money very well spent because of how it will save money in the long term by improving the health of a tiny portion of the community. They improve the overall health of the entire community.
Yeah, I thought it was really great. And you're right. Most of them are volunteers. That's what we do. We just volunteer for stuff like that. I would tell my students to always once to go out the day I saw them in class and buy a blood pressure cuff, because everyone in your neighborhood will know that you're a nurse and everyone's going to ask you to take their blood pressure. And that's a great time to interact. And I think blood pressure cuffs for home are between $10 and $20. Every nurse should have one. Carry it with you. Keep it in your purse with your stethoscope or... You probably don't carry your purse, Jamie, but take it everywhere.
Hey, it's a nice looking man purse. Let me just tell you.
You're the nurse.
But it is important to use those opportunities to interact. And I know that that's when Rose does most of her interaction, is just a once a month blood pressure screening after each of our services on Sunday. But she keeps a note card for each patient in a little note index file. You know, if it were me, I'd have it on my iPad, but that's just generational differences. But she keeps that. But she also has created a little chart, a little fold-up chart that she gives to the patients, and they give it to her, and she fills it in for them to keep with them. So if they go to their doctor, they can, and they ask about their blood pressure, they can say, this is what my nurse at church has been tracking my blood pressure at. So she not only tracks these things, but she gives them the tools to be better prepared to interact with the healthcare environment. I mean, it's just so, it's completely that top to bottom holistic nursing care.
Yeah. And you said even that you guys were doing poison control education and CPR training.
I take care of a lot of the educational stuff. So I do CPR training. I try to do that every couple of months. So all of our, you know, Boy Scout and Girl Scout members, anyone 13 and up that in our church gets it starting right away. And I believe in that. I'm a big proponent of bystander CPR education in the community. And, you know, we haven't had an event in our church, but I'm confident that if it happens in our church, that CPR is going to be started very quickly, because I've made that my goal to make sure there's plenty of trained people around at all times. And I also worked with her to make sure there was an AED in our church. You know, it just made sense. We have enough people in our church at all times. We should have an AED. And so we do. But those are little things that these community nursing outreach programs can do. It's a great way to bring it back around, to talk about unhappy jobs in the beginning of this, but ultimately to come back to nurses ultimately finding a way to be happy and provide care for their patients. And this is one of those instances.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, we're about done right now, and it's just you and I. So, Terry, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you online?
I am at nursestory.com, and I'm on Twitter at Online Nursing.
And I do want to thank you. It took a lot for both of us to jump in here, but, you know, we are never at a loss for things to say.
That's not one of my weaknesses.
Words. I know. Well, thanks for coming on the show this week, Terry. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm Jamie Davis. You can find me here on insightsinnursing.com. And of course, you can find me on my other shows for nurses over at nursingshow.com. And I do want to welcome all of you to send in comments or questions. You know, what do you think about the unhappiness of nurses in your area? And how do you feel about that article or any of the articles we discussed? You can send those in here to insightsinnursing@gmail.com. And of course, you can always leave a comment right over on insightsinnursing.com as well and find all the episodes there. You find out how you can subscribe to the show, all of that available at insightsinnursing.com. That's it for the two of us. We'll be back again soon with another episode here at Insights in Nursing. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to Insights in Nursing.